The Rising Tide by Anne Cleves, read by Janine Burkett. Chapter 1. Philip was first of the group to the island. He'd had to drive overnight, but it was worth the effort to get here before the morning high water, before the day trippers crossed from the mainland in their cars and coaches to buy ice cream and chips. He tried not to resent the squabbling children and the wealthy elderly, but he was always pleased when the island was quiet. As he did at every reunion, he wanted to sit in the chapel and reflect for some time in peace. This year would mark 50 years of friendship, and he needed to offer a prayer of thanks and to remember. The most vivid memory was of the weekend when they'd first come together on the island. Only Connect, the teacher had called it. Part outward bound course, part encounter group, part team building session. And there had been a connection so strong and fierce that after 50 years the tie was still there, unbroken and still worth celebrating. This was where it had all started. The next memory was of death and a life cut short. Philip had no fear of dying. Sometimes he thought he would welcome death, as an insomniac longs for sleep. It was as inevitable as the water, which twice a day slid across the sand and mud of the shore until the causeway was covered. Eventually, he would drown. His faith provided no extra comfort, only a vague curiosity. Almost, he hoped that there would be no afterlife. Surely that would take energy. And there were days now when he felt that he had no energy left. It had seeped away in his service to his parish and the people who needed him. He did regret the deaths of others. His working life moved to the beat of funeral services, the tolling of the church bell, the march of pallbearers. He remembered the babies, who'd had no experience of life at all. The young, who'd had no opportunity to change and grow. He'd been allowed that chance, and he offered up another prayer of gratitude. An image of Isabel, so young, so bonny, so reckless in her desires and her thoughtlessness, intruded into his meditation, and he allowed his mind to wander. Was it Isabel who kept the group returning to the holy island of Lindisfarne every 5 years? Had her death at the first reunion bonded them together so tightly that despite their differences they were as close as family? Perhaps that deserved gratitude too, because these people were the only family he had left. In the tiny chapel, with its smell of damp and wood polish, he closed his eyes and he pictured her, blonde and shapely and sparking with life. A wide smile and energy enough for them all. From the first floor of the pilgrim's house, he'd seen her driving away to her death. He'd watched the argument that had led to her sudden departure. 45 years ago, Isabel had drowned, literally. No metaphor had been needed for her. Her body had been pulled out of her car once the waters had retreated. Her vehicle had been swept from the causeway in the high tide of the equinox, tossed from the road like a toy by the wind and the waves. Once she'd set out on her way to the mainland, there had been no chance to save her. Had that been the moment when he'd changed from a selfish, self-opinionated, edgy young man to a person of faith? Perhaps the conversion had begun a little later, the evening of the same day, when he'd sat in this chapel in the candlelight with his friends, and they'd cried together, trying to make sense of Isabel's passing. Annie and Daniel, Lou and Ken, Rick and Philip,